230 billion Canadian dollars from Canadians has flowed into the U.S. and entered the U.S. ecosystem. And so what does that mean? That means no issuers are the benefit of that flow. No indexes are the benefit of that flow. No capital markets, no lawyers, no auditors, no regulators, no taxes, nobody. All of that money has left, and it's probably left for good. It's going to be very hard to repatriate that money. But we're going to work on some things to try to bring it back. But it's going to be very challenging. Okay. So right. Over a third the size of our industry has left Canada and has gone to the US.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Welcome back. This is Insight is Capital. I'm Pierre Daly, Managing Editor at AdvisorAnalyst.com. The Canadian ETF industry continues to experience rapid expansion in 2025, with assets under management nearing $600 billion and projections for continued double-digit growth, fueled by strong inflows, evolving investor preferences, and increasing adoption by both institutional and retail investors seeking flexible, cost-effective, and diversified solutions. Ellie Ufest, Executive Director at CETFA, the Canadian ETF Association, is my guest. Ellie was appointed Executive Director of CETFA earlier this year. Prior to that, he's had an extensive career as CEO and partner of a national marketing research and consulting firm where, among other things, he worked on the campaigns of political candidates, including the former mayor of Toronto and premier of Ontario. In addition to that, he has served as a principal at Canada's top communications and public affairs firm, where he advised Fortune 500 clients, among others, on their most pressing strategic and organizational issues. Ellie, wow, it's fantastic to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Pierre, for having me. I'm really happy to be here with you today.
Likewise. So, Ellie, just let's jump in. Let's start at the beginning. Tell us a bit about your career journey. What's the story behind your career, and what inspired you ultimately this year to get involved in reshaping the Canadian ETF landscape?
Well, thanks very much, Pierre, for the introduction. Frankly, I don't know if I'll be able to top what you just did, but I'll try my best. I've got over 20 years of experience working in, you know, what I describe broadly as marketing, strategy, data analytics. I've had the good fortune of working, I guess if I can describe it, into two sides of the industry. So what I call the consulting side, I've spent half my career, as you alluded to, in the consulting world, working across numerous verticals, whether it's politics, public affairs, consumer packaged goods, travel and tourism, financial services, et cetera, et cetera. And I spent the other half of my career, working on what's called, you know, the buyer side. So I spent, 5 years managing the insights department at Whirlpool Canada, and I spent just over 4 years working at Johnson & Johnson in brand management. And so when I look back at my career, all told, you know, I've had the good fortune, if you will, of having a pretty diverse set of experiences, working with some amazing clients, some amazing organizations. And I'll just sort of say one more thing very quickly. Over the last five or so years, I think it's about 5.5 years, I'm actually also a part-time professor at a number of universities and colleges across the province. It's been one of, frankly speaking, one of the most interesting, rewarding jobs I've been fortunate to have. I love meeting students. I love teaching. I love sort of exploring ideas. And sort of over the last 20, or I guess it's now 22 years, if I had to sort of summarize all of my experiences, that's the way I would classify them all.
Amazing. I mean, you've had quite a breadth of experience across many, many different areas. And then on top of that, like, where do you find the time to also be a part-time professor? That's incredible.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it takes a village. I've got a very understanding wife. So thank you very much, Jen, for helping me. Very, very involved family, of course, you know, my mother, my mother-in-law, you know, it really does take a village, and I'm very fortunate to have that village to help, you know, me with my career. And I've got three kids, which is probably the most important job that I have. I somehow make it work with the village that supports me.
Yeah. Well, Ellie, that's inspiring. That's amazing, you know, to have been able to pack that much, that much activity into your working life and career, it must bring a really incredible dimension to whatever you're doing. I mean, to have so many, you know, mental models and experiences that inform your thought.
Yeah, you know, I think just the benefit of my interesting, what I call sort of interesting, unique experience, because typically, and maybe I'm being a bit general here, but you know, most people, once they pick a career path, they sort of go down that career path. You know, if you're an accountant, you're an accountant. If you're a lawyer, you're a lawyer. If you work in financial services, you work in financial services. And I've kind of gone back and forth between consulting, buyer side, teaching, and I've had the good fortune of working across numerous industries. And to your point, you know, I bring all that experience to bear into what I'm currently doing right now at the ETF Association.
Well, I'm just thinking that, you know, in terms of, you know, your last 5 years, you mentioned that, you know, you've been a part-time professor at several colleges and universities. I can't help thinking that must also really help to inform your perspective on that generation.
Absolutely. You know, students, and what's interesting, about the educational landscape right now is, as you might be familiar, or some of your viewers might be familiar, Canada has had the benefit, I would say, largely the benefit of many international students coming to the country over the last number of years. And so many of my classes are comprised of many Canadians, of course, but also a large contingent of international students. And so it's interesting to see the dynamic between both of these sort of student groups working together, the benefits that go along with sort of exchanging of ideas. And I can say just very, you know, very specifically, the students, irrespective of whether they're international or Canadian, are hungry. They want to learn. They want a career. They all want a house. They all want, you know, they all want a normal life, and they're hungry to achieve it. And so it's been interesting to experience that and to help them in that journey as they, you know, go from students to productive workers and Canadians.
It must be very gratifying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Ellie, you're a fairly new face in the ETF world. Now that you've had some time to settle in, what has surprised you? Have there been any aha moments since stepping into your role?
I would say there's probably two interesting things that, prior to getting into the role, I never sort of really thought the industry would be like it. The first one is just how dynamic and how innovative ETFs are. I never really sort of gave it much thought, frankly, before I got into the role. But now that I'm in the role, you know, I can sort of look at all of the things about the industry and say, this is probably one of the most dynamic industries that I've ever worked in. And I've worked in just about every industry, every vertical, you know, out there. Just for a bit of context, you would of course know this. You know, ETFs were invented in Canada. They were Canadian pension 35 years ago. And so you look at all of the things that the industry has done over the last 35 years, and all the innovation, covered calls, crypto, ESG, thematics, all of this stuff really comes out of Canada. And so, Canada is a thought leader, is a trailblazer on many of these technologies and many of these aspects of the industry. And so I had no idea, frankly, before I got into the role, that ETFs were created in Canada, crypto started in Canada, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So that's one interesting aspect for me. You know, that was probably the biggest aha moment is, you know, just how dynamic and how innovative the industry is in Canada. And that's our gift, if you will, to the world, right? We are thought leaders in this space, and now we're spreading, you know, the technology and the innovation globally. The other thing is, you know, and this has been particularly interesting for me, given my political and public affairs background, is just how willing participants, the regulators and the politicians, have been to listen to us. We have great relationships with many regulators across the country. We have standing meetings with them. We have standing discussions with them. The association is now in a more meaningful, relevant way, increasing our advocacy efforts with politicians, with elected officials, their staff members, the bureaucracy. And so they're very willing to listen to us. They're very willing to take a meeting with us. And that was the sort of the other aha moment for me, is just how interested the other side of the coin is in speaking with us, because they're looking for ideas, they're looking for a stakeholder, they're looking for a partner that can give them context and perspective about the industry, and we'll very happily fill that role for them.
I don't think the folks in the industry fully understand what CETFA is all about and what it has, you know, what the work of CETFA is. the complication of what CETFA does. I mean, what CETFA is trying to bridge in terms of linking the industry between regulators and you know, like the pathways are very complicated, very bureaucratic in some cases, between securities regulators, the issuers, the industry itself, which is why there's so much input from the board. If we can shed some light on what CETFA actually does, as opposed to have it sort of be something that might, by the participants, by the, you know, the advisors in the business, even investors, don't realize what you do, right? I mean, you represent nearly the entire ETF industry in Canada. You are playing a huge role in education and advocacy. And as the ETF space grows, Ellie, and diversifies, how do you see your mission at CETFA adapting?
Our mission is very, very simple, and it's to grow the industry. You know, and I'm oversimplifying it from what can be found on our website, but it's really just to grow the industry. And so, we look at what the penetration rate is of ETFs right now, and the number that I often cite is 20%. So 20% of Canadians invest in ETFs. And so, you know, what I told my board and what I tell, you know, other stakeholders is that if we want to continue to grow the industry, if we want to go from 20 to 25% to 30%, et cetera, penetration, the only way to do that is to your point, work with the regulators, work with the politicians to make sure that we have the environment in which we can grow the industry. So to go from 20% penetration to 25 to 30. So we need the regulators and the politicians as a key partner, a willing participant to help us, you know, break down the barriers that will enable us to grow the industry. So that's sort of point number one. And point number two, we have to do a better job of educating a couple of key stakeholders. What I call Jane and Joe front porch investor. These are just average Canadians, you know, that aren't currently investing in ETFs. They might not even know what an ETF is, right? I mean, they might not even know what it stands for. They might not even know how to access it. They might not know the basics of what an ETF is.
And so you have to literally start from square one.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, working with the regulators is one aspect, but you know, the other side is working with Jane and Joe front porch. I have to explain to them the benefits of an ETF, what an ETF is, why they should consider investing in an ETF, and probably why they might want to consider removing some money from other investments like mutual funds into ETFs, right? And so as of July 1st, or the beginning of July, I should say, maybe the partners that I'm working with might get angry with me that I've given it a very specific date of July 1st, but in early July, we're actually undertaking a totally revamped digital and social media campaign, and its focus will be targeted towards Jane and Joe front porch investor, the retail investor, and explaining to them all of these things that you and I are talking about. So that's going to be one key element of something that the association is going to be working on, not just into, you know, through the balance of 2025, but certainly into 2026 and 2027 and beyond. The other key stakeholder is working with advisors. Most flow still goes through advisors.
Right.
In fact, a strong majority of flow still flows through advisors. And so we need to also work with advisors on educating them on why they might want to suggest ETFs to their clients, how ETFs even work, frankly speaking. And I'll just give you a very simple example. I was at a conference about a month or so ago of advisors, and we asked the question, how many advisors work with ETFs, sell ETFs, recommend ETFs? There's a room of about 300 people. Only 5 hands went up. So we have a large job. Yeah, that was quite shocking to me as well.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was 7 hands. But
it was definitely a minority.
It was an overwhelming minority.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I sort of took that as a key takeaway, and I said, okay, we have to also include advisors as part of our outreach and as part of our education mandate that the association is undertaking. And so again, in early July, in concert with or running parallel with the education and the campaigns that we're going to be running towards Jane and Joe front porch investor, we're going to be targeting advisors specifically around the merits and the benefits of ETFs and why they might want to include that as part of their recommendation to their clients. And so all three of these stakeholders, whether it's regulators, whether it's investors, whether it's advisors, are going to be a key focus for us, not just this year, like I said, but in the coming years for sure.
Yeah. So with education such a major part of your mandate, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions or knowledge gaps out there right now among Canadian investors and advisors when it comes to ETFs? Like what have you sort of revealed? What's been revealed to you? And how is SEFA going to help close those gaps?
So I just alluded, about a minute or two ago around the education campaign. So part of the social media and digital campaign that we're going to be undertaking in the next week or so is around things like, what is an ETF? So, like I said, if 20% of Canadians are investing in an ETF, I'm going to assume that a strong majority of the remaining 80% of Canadians don't even know the basics of what an ETF is, right? And so, we need to explain to them, that they're exchange traded, they're very liquid, they don't just, they're not just bought and sold at the end of the day like other investment tools. So very liquid, very accessible, and you can, purchase them through some online brokerage channel or through an advisor, and they're very, very easily, accessible. So just the basics around,
right.
So that's sort of one component around, education that we're going to be hammering quite a bit in the coming weeks and months. The other side of that is costs. I think, there's this perception out there, even among some regulators and what I call sort of the political class, if you will, that ETFs are have the same sort of cost structure built into them as a mutual fund. And of course, that's not true. They're generally lower cost. They're generally smaller margin for issuers. And so, explaining to them that there are lower management fees typically associated with an ETF versus other investment options is something else that we're going to be focusing on quite a bit. Because, if I'm Jane and Joe Front Porch and I'm investing in a mutual fund, I would probably ask the person who was telling me to invest in ETF, well, why would I invest in ETF? My money's parked in a mutual fund or something else, and I'm very happy with the returns, right? And so we're going to be speaking about costs, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions around costs. And the regulators have done a good job now breaking down some of the barriers around costs with some of the new rules that are coming out, or that have come out and that will come out in 2026. So that's
There are CRM3 and. We've had CRM2 already, but CRM3 promises to, sort of lift the lid on everything, right?
Exactly. So which I think, is by and large a good thing. We want to democratize information. Yeah. We want to democratize products. We want to, give more information to investors. And so, that's all forthcoming, but that'll be also incumbent upon the association to help educate, and get that message out there. The other side of that is, 35 years ago, there was just passive ETFs, let's call it, right? And so, I alluded to the evolution of all of these things over the last 35 years. And, that's going to be another sort of aspect of education that we need to focus on. It's not just passive. It's not just active. It's a whole suite of amazing technologies that are largely born in Canada, like crypto, for example. That investors will have access to. And so these are just three components of a very broad sort of educational campaign that we're going to be weaving in through a lot of our social media and digital marketing that we're going to be undertaking, like I said, in a couple of weeks.
Amazing. I think starting from the very beginning makes sense in terms of reaching the widest number of people.
Jane and Joe Front Porch.
Jane and Joe Front Porch. What are you like? I'm just curious. What do you hear from, for example, your students about? I think Gen Z is very interested in investing. But from your, do you have conversations with your students about some of the things you're doing now with SEFA?
Yes. I don't get too much into the investment side of it. If I do ask my students, well, how many invest in mutual funds? How many invest in ETFs? How many invest, what sorts of investments are they making? And what's interesting is, this is kind of part of the narrative of ETFs. ETFs are perhaps a little bit more technologically sophisticated than other types of investment vehicles. DIY is, of course, increasing. Who's more likely to use a DIY tool? It's younger people. Younger people are better with technology. And so, just sort of empirically, when I speak to the students, they're more inclined to use online brokerages. They're more inclined to manage things on their own. And and this is just sort of one interesting example, has nothing to do with students. I was at the gym the other day working out, and I saw two young people. They could have very likely been my students. They were, I wouldn't think, older than 22 or 25 years old. And they were literally talking about ETFs, buying gold ETFs, buying crypto ETFs, doing it through an online brokerage. And so, when two guys working out at a gym are talking around the interesting technology and the interesting ways to access ETFs, the industry's onto something. And so that's our part to sort of elevate that discussion and blow that discussion up and now bring it beyond, what might be an inclined demographic, namely young people, and now, bring it to the masses of Canadians.
From your vantage point, what are some of the most pressing challenges the ETF industry in Canada is facing or dealing with right now?
You started off our conversation, Pierre, by talking about the 600 billion AUM, and you're 100% right with that. The other side of that coin that you didn't mention, and this is, I think, the biggest issue that we're facing, because it touches on so many things in the industry, is 230 billion, based on some analysis that one of my members have done, is suggesting that money has flowed out of the ecosystem and it's gone directly to the United States. So if our industry is worth 600 billion in Canada, 230 billion Canadian dollars from Canadians has flowed into the US and entered the US ecosystem. And so what does that mean? That means no issuers are the benefit of that flow. No indexes are the benefit of that flow. No capital markets, no lawyers, no auditors, no regulators, no taxes, nobody. All of that money has left, and it's probably left for good. It's going to be very hard to repatriate that money. But we're going to work on some things to try to bring it back. But it's going to be very challenging. Okay. So
right.
Over a third the size of our industry has left Canada and has gone to the US.
So is that 230 billion? Is that part of the 600 billion that's on top of?
Totally separate. That's,
yeah.
Totally separate. Okay. You juxtapose, or I guess you sort of look at also the expiration on the Vanguard patent in 2023. I see you nodding. So you're familiar with it. We're now also familiar, or we're aware of 60 issuers in the US that have applied for license to sell ETF share class, and the SEC is, I think, going to be ruling on it imminently. Like we're expecting an answer at some point this summer. So just sort of back of the napkin math, 60 issuers, they issue 20 ETFs. We're looking at, if my math is right, 1,200 potentially new products that Canadians are going to have access to, which they've never had access to. Canadians were never able to access American mutual funds. They were able to access American ETFs, but not mutual funds. And so now this will open up what I'm describing as a floodgate, a tsunami, quite literally. I don't want to sort of under...
To U.S. mutual funds.
Right.
Through
this ETF share class. And so, 1,200 is a conservative estimate. So we are fully sort of expecting that if 230 billion has left the Canadian marketplace, once Canadians have access to these 1,200 new ETFs, that's just going to increase the flow. And so based on this analysis, at some point, maybe even towards the end of my lifetime, it's probably not in my lifetime, but towards the end of my lifetime, but certainly my kids' lifetime, if this trajectory continues, there really won't be an ETF ecosystem in Canada. This is how stark we see the issue is. And so, we're going to be working with regulators. We're going to be working with politicians to address this issue. And we think the timing is actually right. There's a lot of noise coming out of the US, of course, around, tariffs and taxes. And so that's sort of one aspect that we think actually might benefit our advocacy efforts. The other side of that is, of course, we have a new prime minister who has a financial services and banking background. He probably better understands the financial services landscape of recent memory for sure.
I would expect so. Yeah.
And you sort of look at who he's, who some of his top advisors are. They're by and large bankers,
or professional business people who understand the nature of business. And so in the recent election, we were talking about breaking down into provincial trade barriers. We were talking about, you know, focusing on Canada. We were talking about, he's brought in an amazing team, Prime Minister Carney's brought in an amazing team of people who understand the business. We have noise coming out of the U.S. And so if I can describe it as a, you know, perfect storm of sorts, that we now see things as an opportunity. We see that if we advocate for the industry, if we change some of the tax structures around, if we reduce the burdens on the industry, we will be as competitive or more competitive to the U.S. and Canadians will not choose to send their money to the U.S. You know, not to put too fine a point on it, capital finds the path of least resistance. And frankly speaking, the path of least resistance is the U.S. And so that's why we're seeing a lot of money flow to the U.S., not just from Canada, but
yeah,
I'm concerned about Canada, but money flows from all over the world. And so my objective is to take all of these issues and engage with the federal government, the provincial governments. Let's break down these provincial trade barriers. Let's make our system as efficient or more efficient as the American system, so that Canadians and others invest in the Canadian financial services and ETF ecosystem, so that we can be the benefit of the jobs, the investment, the tax revenue, et cetera, that goes along with all that money.
Looking at, for example, the idea that investors are choosing to invest in U.S. listed ETFs over, you know, versus investing in the Canadian equivalent, the Canadian domiciled equivalents when they can. The problem is that we've taken it for granted. You know, we can invest in U.S. stocks whenever we like. We can invest in U.S. ETFs whenever we like. We can't invest in U.S. listed mutual funds. But that's something that's about to change. But Americans are not able to, nor are they trying to invest in our market in any sort of meaningful way.
Yeah.
And I see what you're doing at CETFA is also to sustain the industry. It's to make sure that Canadians understand that you know, when you go to buy that ETF in the U.S., you know, why don't you take a look first to see if there's the exact same one listed in Canada.
Yep.
And in most cases, a lot of the Canadian domiciled ETFs are, you know, providing U.S. dollar options or Canadian dollar options, but domestically. So you don't have to deal with that foreign property rules. You're not going to have to deal with Section 899.
Yeah.
You're not going to have to deal with all these other problems that are on the horizon. And you're going to contribute meaningfully by doing that,
right,
to the assets staying in Canada.
Agreed. Well, you know? I guess a couple of points. The latest, and I don't know if there are actually rumors anymore. There were rumors, I think, yesterday, but the latest that I've heard, because the Globe and Mail and Bloomberg were reporting on it, is that Section 899, the punitive side on the, I think you called it, Pierre, the revenge tax,
yeah,
I think has actually been removed. That's the latest, which is I think good news.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. You know, so you know, if the rumors, if the articles that have been published turn out to be true, I think that's a good thing. So that's you know, the
first. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. The second point is, you know, look, the association, as I mentioned, is, you know, cares about, you know, the future of the industry. Forget about ETFs for a second, but financial services. And so the question that we're going to,
Ellie, you are the Canadian ETF Association.
Yes, agreed.
It's not just the ETF Association, it's the Canadian ETF Association.
Of course.
Yeah. It's very important.
And so the question that we're going to be asking, you know, the politicians and our political leaders is, do we want a financial services, do we want an ETF market in Canada? And I presume the answer to that will be, well, yes, of course. Why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So, you know, if that is in fact the will of the regulators, and it is in fact the will of the politicians, and I know it is, because, you know, that's what they're telling us, you know, then they'll be able to find a willing partner with us to give them ideas around how to make the ETF ecosystem more competitive in the U.S. And I guess, you know, just one more point, I can tell you that I've spoken to many counterparts, you know, what I call, you know, sister organizations from adjacent financial services associations, and they have the same sentiment. And so I think, frankly speaking, you know, I'm sort of 6 months into the role, but I don't think I'm misspeaking when I say, for the first time in Canadian financial services history, we have, you know, almost near alignments from all of the associations, all of the entirety of the financial services ecosystem. We're all aligned on the objective of making sure that we have a sustainable financial services ecosystem that Canadians will want to invest in. We're engaging with policy leaders and politicians and their staff to ensure that message is loud and clear, and we're giving them ideas on how to achieve that. And so, you know, I, while I can't speak on behalf of other associations, I can say I'm speaking to my counterparts at other associations. We're in alignment in this regard, and I can say specifically CETFA will be undertaking, like I said, some advocacy work to drive this point home. We're going to be engaging with politicians, with their staff, with the bureaucracy, with ideas on how to make our system more competitive.
Yeah, I mean, let's stop beating ourselves up. Let's stop beating each other up. And let's stop looking over the fence and thinking the grass is greener next door.
Agreed.
I think, you know, if we're gonna have a self-supporting, as much as it's possible, a self-supporting capital market, one of the most interesting things that's been tossed around lately during the last 2 or 3 months at least, was the launch of private equity ETFs, PRIV, and I know, you know, it came up in a recent podcast that you were on, and it's come up in several podcasts that we've done, episodes where we've talked about, you know, the launch of private equity in an ETF wrapper. Perhaps the most interesting thing about that, other than the fact that it's somewhat controversial at this point,
right?
Not for long, but the most interesting thing that came up about that was that, and it was the conversation we had with Dave Nadig. And what he brought up was the fact that the most surprising thing about those was not just that they're controversial, but that the amount of capital that those instruments attracted because they were in an ETF wrapper,
right?
They were able to attract capital, much more efficiently and much more rapidly. And in a much more liquid fashion,
right?
Or they were much more liquid friendly to investors than the typical private equity vehicles that have been in existence forever.
Yep.
And what that point was that if we're going to have a capital market where people have a chance to participate in a democratized version of capital markets through the ETF wrapper, chances are they will.
Yeah,
and that's what we're seeing in the U.S. on those innovations. I mean, those were standout things that got a lot of discussion.
Right.
But looking at the, you know, how the ETF wrapper makes it possible for will make it possible for Canadian investors to invest in Canadian capital markets more easily, more directly, as opposed to it being strictly the domain of you know, ultra high net worth or
right,
institutional investors, you're opening up to a whole new world of opportunity of investing for Canadians.
Agreed. Like, I don't have any data to back this up, but if you were to ask me if I wanted to invest in some private equity deal, I wouldn't even know the first step about how to do that. You know, right. I could probably figure it out.
But I
think most investors probably wouldn't even know how to do that. So the ETF wrapper enables people literally at the snap of fingers to,
right,
you know, to gain access to some of these things that would be otherwise largely unreachable unless you're a high, you know, ultra high net worth or institutional best. Like, so, you know, the technology that is ETF has democratized investment tools for literally anybody. I mean, if you have a couple of dollars, extra dollars, and you want to invest in an ETF, all you need to do is just open up your smartphone, download, you know, some DIY brokers, go to an advisor, and it's really just that simple. And it'll take a few seconds to do. But you know, if you ask me, hey Ellie, why don't you invest in some private equity deal? I wouldn't know the first step.
How?
Yeah, I wouldn't know how. So
yeah, I mean, that's been part of the problem, right? The part, like, how do I invest in managed futures? How do I invest in long short equity? How do I invest in, you know, typically up until maybe, you know, just maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that was impossible. That, unless you were ultra wealthy,
right,
or you were an institution, that was next to impossible to do. You had to go through all the accredit, accredited investor rules. You had to qualify. You had to do all that. Now you're gonna we're starting to see, you know, all these different types of hedge fund strategies, absolute return strategies being wrapped in ETFs that now make diversification at the institutional grade of diversification, where you can actually start to introduce more esoteric strategies, more uncorrelated strategies into your portfolio. It's a very exciting time to be an advisor. It's a very exciting time to be an investor.
I agree.
Thanks to ETFs.
I agree 100%. Yeah.
You're known at CETFA for bringing together leaders in the ETF space and collaborating with regulators. There are a number of very broad and imposing regulations on the horizon for 2026, CRM3. Can you give a few recent examples of how CETFA have helped shape policy or helped elevate best practices across the industry?
Yeah. So, you know, my board and all the committees that I have at CETFA basically represent, to your point, Pierre, the entirety of the industry. So we have 96% of AUM represented by the association. And I have, because of that, the good fortune of working with literally the best and brightest people in the industry. And they're reflected in my board, they're reflected on my committees. And so anytime an issue comes up, you know, we sort of look at it internally and we decide, okay, is this a policy issue, a tax issue, you know, whatever it is, do we need, you know, to form a new committee to sort of look at it, address it, and sort of devise a strategy or a plan to address it. And so, you know, we have standing meetings with the OSC, for example, as just, you know, every quarter we meet, we have sort of a regular cadence of discussion with them. If we need something ad hoc, you know, they would be there, of course, as well, where we talk about all the issues that are present to us now and that we expect, you know, might be an issue. And so, you know, we've got a good cadence of meetings with them. They're very receptive, like I've mentioned a number of times, to meeting with us. We've done the same thing in Quebec right now with AMF. We've recently just engaged them. We you know, prior to me joining, prior to this year, we had actually never engaged the AMF in any meaningful way.
Wow.
And so, you know, we just started an engagement process with the AMF, the Quebec Ministry of Finance. We've met with officials there. You know, like I said, we're working on a number of things federally. We're going to be undertaking literally in the next couple of weeks a very significant advocacy campaign to, you know, make Canadians want to invest in Canada. That's actually what the committee that we struck was called, Invest in Canada Committee. And so it's aptly named because that's our objective. It's to, you know, enable Canadians to invest in Canada. And so, you know, without getting into the specifics of, you know, what we're working on and what we're talking about with some of the regulators and the politicians, I can say that we're having meaningful conversations with Ontario regulators, Ontario politicians, Quebec regulators, federal politicians, upcoming, federal regulators. And it's just part of our sort of refocused effort on advocacy. We want to be a stakeholder that the regulators and the governments want to call when they want to do something to optimize the ecosystem. And, you know, what happens when we're not at the table? You know, the BCSE last year came up with a new fee increase. We were not at the table and that passed. And, you know, now we're sort of, you know, bearing the repercussions of that fee hike. And so, you know, with me coming on board over the last 6 months, you know, I've said to my board, we need to be more engaged, more relevant. We need to engage the regulators and the politicians in a more meaningful way than we've ever done, to prevent things like what happened in British Columbia from occurring,
right?
And to make sure that if the politicians want to develop a policy, they do it in consultation with us, not in isolation from us.
The behind the scenes work that you're doing, I think, is what gets sort of glossed over by people in the industry. They don't realize what's going on behind the scenes. They don't realize how many moving parts there are, what's actually being done for them on their behalf in terms of advocacy. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, that's you've had quite an on-ramp.
Well, I can say that
during your first 6 months, Ellie.
I can say we have the good fortune of having most of the major players in the industry as part of the association. And I speak with members of the ecosystem that aren't members of the association, very, very frequently. And so I'm having conversations with them around, you know, why they should actually get involved, you know, and the pitch in a nutshell is help us help you, right? You know, if you're at the table, if you are supportive of the association, you will, you know, just be adding more fuel to our advocacy efforts. You're going to be adding more fuel to our education efforts. And so that message has actually resonated quite strongly. We've gone 3 new members year to date so far into the association. We've got discussions with a whole host of other potential new members coming on. So I'm cautiously optimistic that I'll probably get to probably 6 new members by the time the year ends, by the time 2025 ends. Of course, I don't count my chickens before they hatch, but 3 new members year to date joined the association. And I've got, you know, I've got a whole bunch of conversations with other ones. So, you know, part of my objective is to ensure that the entire ecosystem, not just 96% of the ecosystem, but the entire ecosystem is represented by the association. And, you know, and I think this message of advocacy and education and a renewed focus on both has actually resonated with the marketplace. And I think the proof is in the pudding with the 3 new members and, you know, the 3 or 4 other conversations that I'm having right now. And I'm cautiously optimistic that I'll be able to get a few more new members to join because of our renewed focus on these mandates.
Ellie, you've got a strong background in marketing and strategy. You're also an educator. How are you drawing on all of that experience in your role as CEFA? Like what new initiatives or priorities are you especially passionate about?
I guess one of the benefits of coming from strategy and marketing is you always have to have a plan. You need a plan. You need a marketing plan. You need a strategy plan. You need a strategic plan. Because otherwise, if you're just sort of shooting from the hip and you know, are kind of rudderless, if you will, and you're just sort of going issue to issue, you know, how do you maintain focus? How do you allocate resources, financial resources, or human resources accordingly? And so the first thing that I did, literally the first thing that I did when I joined in January of this year was I went on a little bit of a road tour and a listening tour. I met with many of our members, many of my board members, many people that are connected to the industry. And I said, you know, what is it that you want CEFA to be? How can we help you get bigger? How can we help you be more relevant to investors? And so I did that for the first couple of months and I did a lot of listening. And by the time that process was finished, I developed what I would, you know, describe as a very solid strategic plan that will lay the foundations for how we're going to be driving the association for this year, and will lead, of course, into 2026 with a good sort of you know, underpinning of strategies. And so, you know, where did I net out? It's we want to be more relevant in the education space. We talked about that. We want to be more relevant with the political class, you know, with the regulators, the politicians, the staff. And so, you know, we've spoken about that. And so I guess all that to say is the first thing I did is as a marketing person who had 20 years of sort of marketing or consulting background is I said, okay, we got to come up with a plan and everything that we do has to marry back up to this plan. And so I'm happy to say that, you know, the plan is our North Star, if you will. All financial resources, all human resources have to marry up to something in that plan. Otherwise, we're not doing it. And the board has been exceptionally supportive of that. And I think they're now starting to see the benefits of having a plan in place because, you know, it gives us a very good pathway that we can follow to achieve our objectives. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is, of course, you know, being an educator, which I mentioned at the onset of our conversation, I really enjoy. I love it. Keeps me young. It keeps me fresh. Mm-hmm. I've got interesting ideas. You know, I'm 45 years old. I'm not that old, but I'm also not that young. And so my 22-year-old or 24-year-old students are keeping me young, if you will. You know, they're telling me about all the cool new technologies, which sometimes go right over my head. But, you know, we have great conversations around AI or around new apps or around new technologies that are coming out, which, you know, by and large, I have some vague concept of, but, you know, working with and educating and speaking with younger people, they're actually educating me sometimes on some of this interesting stuff that's coming down the pipeline that they're much better versed in. And so,
yeah,
you know, they're keeping me young.
Completely different perspectives on the same things. Like you might be both looking at the same technology or the same idea, but they have a completely different view than you.
Exactly. So,
which is a great discovery.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's keeping me young. It's keeping me fresh, and I'm able to bring all of that sort of, you know, knowledge and expertise
coupled with everything that I've sort of accumulated over the last 20 plus years to the role here. I think it's been an added benefit overall.
Wow, Ellie, what a great conversation. Thank you so much for your incredibly valuable time and insight. It's been great chatting with you.
It's been really, really fun. Really, really appreciate the opportunity to get our renewed mandate and renewed focus out to your listeners. And I really appreciate the time as well, Pierre.
Thank you.